Hello everyone, my name is Yashna.
And I'm Kalpana.
Welcome to the Worth of Our Opinion podcast.
We are Indian postgrads in psychology, one among those that actually can't read your mind. We share our experiences and conflicts of the world, the other, and the self. Now our content is not limited to the field that we're studying. We value listening with the intention to understand, and on this podcast, we share perspectives in a real, meaningful, and simple way.
But before we begin, a little disclaimer. We are going to be talking about so many topics on this podcast, and when we're talking about them, when we're in that zone of flow, we may not be aware of the generalizations we may be making at that moment. We believe that there are exceptions that exist for everything, and we would like to take full responsibility for all that we share and speak about. Hello everyone. Hi Kalpana.
Hello.
How has your week been?
My week's been great. Actually, I think both of our weeks were great this time, because on the 10th of
September,
we released our first episode, Pressures of Productivity, and
Yay!
We officially launched. Let me check if I'm recording. Yes, I'm recording. We officially launched our first episode, and the response was quite overwhelming. I was very touched.
I have no words. I'm speechless with the amount of love and effect, support we've received the last 2 days.
Exactly.
And it's just crazy. And
exactly.
For those of you who are confused, we're talking about this now in this episode because we pre-record our episodes.
Yeah.
That's why, so technically we record them 2 months prior to when we're releasing them. So technically it's still September for us, but you're actually hearing it probably in October or November or December.
I don't know. We don't know, bro.
We don't know. But yeah, so basically we're pre-recording it. It's still September for us.
Yeah.
And we just released our first episode, like Kalpana mentioned, and I'm ecstatic.
I know. And we just want to say that, like, whoever has been listening to this, to our podcast so far and all the previous ones, I mean, we're just very, very grateful, and we're so excited that you're here as a part of us. And yes, to more future endeavors, I guess.
And you know what, like a lot of people texted me saying can't wait to hear it on every 10th, 20th, and 30th. It's already sticking.
I know. Yeah,
it was amazing. I can't explain how grateful I am.
I know. Yeah
to be a part of this, we're in this together.
Yeah
I'm just happy I'm doing it with someone I love and someone I respect.
Okay, I did not see that coming. You should have seen my face. I was like, oh, damn, just talking about me? Well, yeah. I mean, wow. Okay. Anyway, going on to what we're going to be talking about today is our monthly book review.
Yes.
Take it over.
So we're back with a monthly book review. And this time in our, monthly book, we're going to be talking about this book called Fight with Fat. And it is by the author, Dr. Kamal Mahawar. So before, we let Kalpana speak, I'm just going to read. So this is the blurb that I'm going to be reading out. It goes like this. Are you overweight? You're not alone. Globally, approximately 2 billion people fall in this category. Closer home, India too battles this pandemic, with over 3/4 of its population obese and a much larger number overweight. The numbers keep showing an upward trend and the health index a downward one. And yet, at least in theory, obesity is completely preventable. So how do we do it? After his book, The Ethical Doctor, which focused on structural issues with Indian healthcare, Dr. Kamal Mahawar is now back with his take on what you can do to manage your weight and your health. And in a gripping text, interspersed with biting, no holds barred commentary on contemporary Indian intelligentsia and outdated social norms, Dr. Mahawar, with Fight with Fat, presents all that you need to know about obesity and how you can fight it for good. So now, as someone who's never read this book, I would definitely pick it up because it's packed with information. I feel like it's packed with information.
It is, yeah.
And I would love to read, what the author has to offer. The blurb was quite specific and quite descriptive, and that's something I would definitely read.
Yeah.
But before, we let Kalpana speak again and explain to me and the listeners, what the author speaks about and what she learned from it, I'd like to take a couple of minutes extra to, speak about the author, Dr. Kamal Mahawar. And Dr. Kamal Mahavar is a consultant general and a bariatric surgeon at the Sunderland Royal Hospital and a visiting professor at the University of Sunderland in the United Kingdom. For those who don't know, bariatric surgery is an operation that helps lose weight by making changes, you know, to the digestive system. Back to the author, Dr. Kamal Mahavar has been closely involved with obesity management for over a decade now. And Dr. Mahavar takes significant academic interest in both medical and surgical management of obesity. Like it was mentioned in the blurb before, Dr. Mahavar's first book, The Ethical Doctor, is about the current state of Indian healthcare, and it received widespread media coverage, you know, all over the world, even in India. So over to you, Kalpana. Help me and our listeners, you know, understand what the book is about and what are your key takeaways from the book?
There is a lot that Mahavar talks about in his book. Before I begin, though, there are two things that I really want to bring to light.
Right.
Topics like obesity and weight and fat are things that I think are very sensitive to talk about.
Right.
Because I do believe that there's a lot of pain that people on extreme ends of the weight spectrum that they go through, you know? And things like receiving mean comments or just being treated differently, being forced to be someone that you aren't, and having to feel less about yourself. So concepts like body image and a lot of pain associated with weight is a very, very salient thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
So right. I think that is one of the biggest things that I personally believe when it comes to talking about weight. And honestly, Asha and I really want to go in depth on what obesity actually is. We want to talk about all things regarding this, like that. Body image, the body positivity movement. And we want to go really deep into this topic. And this isn't us trying to be all superficial and just saying, hey, obesity, and throwing it out there and not adding depth to it. So I'd like to just share that please do expect a lot more podcasts on this topic, as well as allied topics related to health and the human body and things like that. And
the whole healthcare system as well.
Yeah, like you can expect more. And we are going to be dealing with a lot of, and especially since we're doing this, a lot of the psychosocial aspects of these issues.
Right.
They are going to be addressed. This is only a book review. That too, number one, it's a book review, and also it's more or less from a public health perspective. You know, how do we make individual changes that essentially can, like, at a public health perspective, how can that have an impact on individual life? So that, with that, I want to go ahead with this. To start with, Dr. Mahavar just first off the bat says that we can't start talking about obesity without talking about the obesity paradox, which is essentially that because people have a higher BMI, and I'm not going to be touching on things like BMI and dieting and things like that, which is addressed in the book. However, it isn't something that was as salient as other points in the book that I will be mentioning. So he says that just because people have a higher BMI doesn't mean that they're unhealthy. You have people who are athletes who have a higher muscle mass and lower body fat percentage, but they have a higher BMI. So does that mean that they're unhealthy? No. At the same time, you have people who are in the average BMI or in the lower BMI, but their BMI essentially means body mass index. Sorry for not mentioning it before.
Right.
So you have people who have an average or lower body mass index, and they may be some people who have a lesser muscle mass percentage, but they have a higher body fat percentage. Essentially, body fat or adipose tissue, as it's called, is unhealthy. Because if it's accumulating, it puts people who are even an average or below average BMI indexes, I mean body mass indexes, at a greatened risk to develop a lot of diseases or illnesses as compared to people who look overweight and obese but have a higher muscle mass, you know?
Right.
There are a lot of people who are obese who have a higher muscle mass than body fat percentage. So that is the obesity paradox. Going forward, to start with, if we're looking at the book as such, again, as Yashna mentioned, he not only talks about obesity as such, but he talks about the underlying social structures and social norms that our society is built on that either maintains this trend. So that is one thing I personally appreciate from this book. To begin, number one, obesity is not a disease of the rich anymore.
Definitely.
You know, you would think that, okay, you have more money, you can afford more food, you can afford a lot more facilities, a lot more people to help you out with stuff, you have a more sedentary lifestyle, you tend to be more obese. That's not the case now.
I feel like that's something that should be mentioned a lot of times in whenever we're talking about obesity. It's not a disease for the rich anymore, and that's something that's supposed to be, you know, I don't know how to highlight this on a podcast, but this is something I would definitely highlight.
Yes, and he, Dr. Mahavir, says this is the case for two things. Number one, there is a lot of disposable income in the hands of middle and lower income countries. There is a lot of disposable income in the hands of lower and middle income people, right?
Right.
That's one. Also, the prevalence of processed foods and junk foods has become very, very cheap. You could get like a packet of chips for like $5.
Yeah.
And you can get all kinds of processed foods for such cheap rates that it becomes more affordable to get that.
Right.
You know? And the cost of healthy food, you know, has become higher.
Right.
So why is this more grave for India, you know? Number one, India is just becoming a developed country. It's still in the developing stages where there are high rates of unemployment, high rates of malnourishment. People don't get the quality food that they deserve. But the worst part is that if you are part of a lower or middle income class, right, and you were to get obesity, you just don't die with obesity as in one go. You suffer from series and series of illnesses, be it diabetes, arthritis, heart complications, you name it.
And it's very gradual, I feel.
It's very gradual. Yeah. You're right. And especially chronic stress, you know, things like that.
Right.
These are things that are comorbid. And this is something I'll mention even later on. But this is comorbid in the sense that these illnesses occur with obesity. And this becomes a very dangerous issue because these people may not have the financial resources to actually sustain, to stay healthy and try to curb this condition, which makes it all the more important to come up with preventative measures.
Right.
So number two, when we're looking at the cost that obesity has to society, this is one of the biggest, another big takeaway from it. If you're looking at countries like, for example, I'm only mentioning these countries because he talks about them.
Right.
Countries like UK and USA and stuff like that. For these countries, the cost that obesity has is quite high for two reasons. Because of the employment rates that are also high. And so if you have a significant population that is obese or classified as obese, they face a lot of complications when it comes to work, both because of physical stigma and because of the physical complications that the condition itself possesses. You know, for a various number of reasons, employability becomes an issue.
Okay.
So in a country where employment rates are high, obesity is a significant cost because you have a significant labor power that is not showing up, you know, or is not considered enough or not included enough.
Right.
That's one. Then in the second context, if you're looking at healthcare, you know, how much are these people spending in on healthcare? So the GDP matters a lot here. Countries like UK and US, they invest around 8% of their GDP in healthcare.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So costs to like, so cost that obesity has is quite high because it's an epidemic and people are spending a lot and, you know, whatnot. You get the gist. But going back down to India, coming here now, it's not that big of a cost is what Dr. Mahavir says. Number one, because our unemployment rates amongst people with a normal BMI itself are really, really high. And so the proportion of people who aren't employed who are classified as obese or overweight, it doesn't really make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
So because there's already so many people who are normal, I mean, quote unquote, normal in their BMI.
Right.
That's it. That's the case. In the perspective of healthcare now, right? India spends only around 1.4% of their GDP in comparison to 8% in UK and US. That is a stark difference. That is huge, dude. So like... Yeah. If we're looking at this on a public health perspective, obesity isn't that big of a cost to society, is what he says. However, the costs that actually would be accounted for is that of the immediate family or immediate dependents of the person who is diagnosed with obesity.
Right.
So this is that.
Also, this is something that Kalpana sent me from the book, and I found it extremely interesting, and I just, it couldn't not be a part of the podcast.
Yeah.
And so this is what the author says in the book, and he says that as of 2014, it is estimated that about 266 million men and 375 million women were obese worldwide. And now, this may not seem, you know, that alarming, but if you actually, you know, compare it to how it was back then in 1975, wherein only 34 million men and 71 million, you know, women were obese. So, like, from 34 million to 266 million men, and from 71 million to 375 million women in just, like, a span of 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can see how, you know, drastic the change has been.
Yeah, it is. That's just crazy, bro.
And the author also, you know, states that if you include those who are overweight and not just obese, that would just bring the current number to about like a 2 billion people. That's like a quarter of the humanity.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how people are going to take this, and I feel like they should take it as like a very alarming shift, but it's crazy.
Exactly.
And, so in percentage wise, 11% of men and 15% of women are obese, and you know, there are projections that say that, you know, by 2025, 18% men and 25% women are likely to be obese by 2025. And that's just, I just found it extremely interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to share this.
Along these lines, Dr. Mahavir also says that, like, I mean, obviously, it's not just one-way street. Obviously, BMI doesn't encompass everything. It's given,
right?
He says, though, that the rates of obesity that are accounted for, things that are, like, not related to dieting and exercise, right? For example, hormonal changes and other genetic things. Things that account for obesity that are not related to weight and dieting and that are not related to dieting and exercising, right? Things like hormonal changes. The rates of that are very, very low. You know, for people to get obesity with like just hormonal implications. That those rates are low, but they do exist. So he acknowledges that BMI isn't the only way to measure it. However, we can see that a disease or an illness that's highly preventable, right, is growing.
And that was so rapidly.
Rapidly, rapidly, you know? So that is something to, because again, even like, just like our podcast, he talks about the individual differences that do exist and the like minority differences that do exist.
Yeah.
But on an average, it's mostly preventable, you know? If not preventable, it is in some way manageable. So if people start with insulin resistance, right, they can develop obesity. I will touch upon this later. Insulin resistance is a hormonal condition, right? It affects our hormones. So that can cause obesity. But the rates of that, of which that happens in the population are much lesser than the rates at which people get diabetes and obesity from their lifestyle, you know? So just wanted to put that in with Yashna's sharing of the statistic. So moving on to number three, when it comes to counting calories, again, like this is, I'm not going too in depth in this, but he says that it is important to be calorie conscious. It is important to be aware of our daily calorie requirements based on how active we are in a day. However, to precisely measure our BMR, which is the basal metabolic rate, he says that these things, you know, things like BMR, you know, it's what that's what the short form is. And there are tons of metrics that measure different kinds of, you know, stuff and everything. These are things that are supposed to be measured in a lab setting where researchers can precisely measure the amount of calories that a person is taking or, you know, participants or samples are taking, you know. But in real life, you know, like you have all kinds of websites that talk about, hey, calculate your BMR.
Even apps for that matter.
Apps for that matter, yeah. So he says that, dude, like you can't calculate these precisely because no matter how you, look, unless you're in a lab setting, you can't actually track your calories. So these apps, dude, like one thing I love about his book is that it's so cutting. He's like, these apps think they have it all together and, you know, whatever, but no, they don't. So I love how his language is. It's so like, here, this is it. I'm not sugarcoating anything. So there, no matter what, how hard you try, there's a likelihood that you're eating at least 100 calories higher than what your actual calorie requirement is. You It's very, very difficult to calculate it. There is no point. So be conscious and be general about it, but don't go too hard on yourself in trying to measure how many calories a particular food has. Yes, and another thing regarding our basal metabolic rate, he says our daily calorie requirement varies from day to day depending on our physical activity. Right now, I'm in quarantine. I'm not moving my legs. I'm not moving anything. My calorie requirement is very, very lesser compared to my days in uni when I would go walk around and stuff like that. What he says is measure your weight, you know, regularly. And that is the most easiest indicator. Don't try to break your head trying to calorie count on these apps and everything. And honestly, I deleted mine when I read that.
Same, I deleted it after you told me this.
Yeah. Number four, I can't afford exercise. You know, and I hear this a lot. You know, I'll be like, oh my God, I want to go to a gym. I want to work out. I want to get fit. But oh my God, it's so expensive. I mean, this chapter killed it for me. I was like, damn. Like, I mean, I know it's quite obvious, but when a person literally sits and tells you that, listen, for you to actually gain the benefits of exercise, you only need to walk 45 minutes a day. Just brisk walk.
And to be honest, I can personally vouch for this. Mm. I am someone who loves walking. And even if it's in my house, I walk. I turn on the, you know, tracker app.
Yeah.
And I walk for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And exercise is basically doing something consistently for a consistent amount of time.
Exactly.
And that too, like, it has to be done every day. I feel like walking is a very, very underrated exercise.
Of course.
But yeah, go on.
It's so underrated. And he says that people underestimate how much this actually contributes to our heart and our blood rate. I mean, right. Our blood supply. How much it contributes to our heart and our blood supply. And it's enough to derive the benefits that cardio has on our body. And, you know, and the effects of walking, they last over at least for 2 to 3 hours after that. So he's like, listen, try not to use this excuse that, okay, if I need to exercise, I need to go to the gym and I need to, you know, I need to lift some weights. I need to do these crunches. And I mean, like, basically walking is enough. You know, imagine if you are to walk for the rest of your life for 30 minutes a day. Imagine that is so much more sustainable than doing like a 1 month program.
And then not doing it at all.
And then not doing it at all, you know?
Right.
So that's one thing that I was like, okay, you know, this is something I really want to talk about. This is something I personally learned and I took away from it.
Yeah.
Number five. Mm. This, I mean, guys, like, I know for every single point I said, I was like, oh my God, this is mind-blowing. But this one is honestly, truly mind-blowing.
Right.
Mahavir dedicates like 2 to 3 chapters on just talking about cooking. And he's like, things like cooking and stuff like that are not taught in the education system as much as we could. There's not a lot of research that goes into food research. You know, how can we make amazing and tasty recipes that are so, so healthy?
Right.
And so on the research perspective, he's like, listen, we don't have a lot of people. I mean, we don't have a lot of funds in research in general, but like... in food, I mean, there can be so much into food science that's invested that could actually contribute into how we cook food.
Right.
And to support that point, he goes on to talk about the usage of oil in our foods.
Okay.
If you notice, he says that the Indian diet, the Indian cuisine, the vegetarian, because predominantly many of us are vegetarians, I think.
Yeah, even I don't know.
Let us know. I mean, like, if any of you guys know about this more, do let us share what your inputs are on this aspect. So essentially, we're not used to having a lot of meat, right? Our diet is very, very, very low in protein and it's very high in fat.
Mm.
We imagine, Yashna, we put oil in almost every curry that we make. We use oil in a lot of things. We use ghee in a lot of things. We use butter in a lot of things. Carbs are a lot.
But I also feel like if you're having a well-balanced diet, you know, with roti, rice, and you know, good amount of, you know, vegetables and things like that, I feel like you're pretty safe. Like, even though we are using a lot of oil and ghee, I feel like it's, you know, still important because ghee is said to be strong for the bones or something.
Exactly. No, that is in no way contradicting my point. In fact, he talks about balanced diets. I just didn't include this in here because there were a lot of other things I wanted to talk about. He says that there is no use in trying to negate an entire food group. So we have carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, and you can't just negate a particular food type. So that is an
exactly. Yeah, there, I like this point.
Yeah, of course. That is in no way contradicting to anything that, you know, I'm sharing and what Mahavir is sharing. So that is extremely true.
Right.
And if you're looking at a public health level, right?
Right.
Protein levels are significantly low. And because of processed foods, the balance that fats have become high. And simple carbs and, you know, unhealthy carbs are higher as well. So he goes on to talk about the concept of using oil for cooking.
Right.
Why do we use a lot of oil in our foods, like fried foods and samosas? And I mean, I don't know why I came up with samosas. He gave the example of samosas.
But we use oil in most things in India.
Yeah. So why though?
Right.
You know, and he, like, his thing was so mind-blowing. He was like, for two reasons. We didn't have renewable resources to cook. You know, it was based on firewood. It was based on just, okay, you got to light the fire. You got to cook within that time. Oh, that's all.
Right.
You know, and it didn't sustain the amount of time that actual cooking would take. And it wouldn't reach the highest boiling point as compared to oil. Oil has a higher boiling point. You know, is that what it's called? Boiling point? I mean, I lost all touch with chemistry and physics and stuff. So anyway, yeah, it has a higher boiling point, which is why we get burnt more when oil touches our body compared to when water touches our body, like boiling water. So the usage of oil in traditional times was relevant because it saved on cooking time, number one. Number two, because in olden days we did not have refrigerators, using oil extracted all of the water content from the food, water content from the food that we had or the food that we were cooking so that it could stay longer. It could stay preserved longer. So in that time, using oil was very, very relevant.
Right.
It's not that relevant now because we have things like air fryers, we have microwaves, and we have all kinds of technology that allow us to enjoy the same quality of food. Obviously, without oil, I mean, maybe the depth of flavor is compromised, but it is much more healthier if we're going to balance our oil intake and not overdo it at times. So I think that was a really, really big, like, I mean, a big learning for me because I'm like, oh, I mean, I didn't know that. So, when it comes to cooking along the lines of that, we tend to overprocess our foods. You know, I've come across many, and this is in my personal life. I don't know if any of you all have experiences as well, but a lot of people it's foreign to eat raw food, to eat salads. You know, I'm not talking about salads as in, you know, cucumbers and onions and all that on the side of roti and, you know, chawal or, you know, other curries and stuff like that. But I'm talking about, you know, how like in European cultures and Western cultures, you have salad as a meal, you know?
Yeah. Like the huge bowl of salad with lots of veggies. Yeah.
Yeah. And raw veggies. Veggies. You know, it's very weird. I mean, I've met some people who are like, dude, it's really weird to not cook food. You know, I'm not used to eating raw food. In Indian cuisine, we don't really eat a lot of raw food. Why is this the case, though? Dr. Mahavir says that, again, in olden days, or at least, you know, like a couple of decades before, the concept of quality water and proper sanitation and the spread of infection, the spread of communicable diseases, made it quite dangerous to eat foods that were just raw and unprocessed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
By cooking
I've heard this point before. Yeah.
Yeah, right? I mean, these are things I hear everywhere. And I don't know why, like, in this book, it just, the way he worded it was just, oh my God, this makes a lot of sense.
Right.
We couldn't rely on just eating raw food to, you know, because what if we get sick? I mean, come on. But in the process of that, the way we cook our food, we tend to overcook it sometimes. And if we overcook it, it kills most of the nutrients and the value that we have in our food.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things he mentioned on this, but I'm not going to get too in deep in it. Please, please go read this book, you guys. I would so recommend it. So go read this chapter specifically. You'll get a lot more of an in-depth idea on what I'm talking about.
Especially if you're an Indian.
Yeah, especially if you're an Indian, because his work is the only thing I've found that is genuinely talking about this in the Indian context. So our last point of our podcast today is childhood obesity. And honestly, this is something that's it's very, very heavy to talk about, because he says that 20% of Indian children are obese or overweight. And this becomes more horrid and more dark for people who do become obese, because number one, as kids, there are higher chances of experiencing bullying and teasing in schools and just being pressurized But the difference, see, again, like, everyone does experience this kind of bullying or pressure or these, like, hate speech of sorts, you know, being mean and rude. But the difference between adults and children, he says, is that as adults, we know our worth, you know? We know, as in some level, to not let every single thing, we know how to differentiate. But no doubt, that is still very difficult to handle. But for children, they still don't know what their worth is. And as kids, they end up internalizing everything that goes around them, and with respect to being overweight or being obese. And honestly, it wrecks their self-perception, it wrecks their individual identity, and it stifles them rather than building their confidence. And like, they lose out on so much already before even experiencing what adulthood is like. When it comes to building relationships and building your career, it's a major setback.
Right. And just to bring this point out, we are specifically talking about obesity, and that's why we're talking about, you know, children who are overweight and obese. And but the same applies to people who are underweight and who aren't, you know, of the normal quote-unquote BMI.
Exactly. And, you know, it's important because I want to make that very clear. And this is a sensitive thing and we want to handle it sensitively. So, So before they even get to establish and experience what adulthood is like, it is a major setback. And the way he words this part is just so beautiful and so tender. And you can actually experience, you could see the pain that children probably go through. And so more than, like, that is one thing psychologically, but even physically, right? When our body is setting itself, you know, like setting itself during adolescence, the kind of weight you are, it can make it increasingly difficult for you to mold yourself into a different level of body fat that you have in your body, is what he says, because it's not as simple. Imagine growing up to be considered, or growing up diagnosed with obesity, and suddenly, you know, forcing your body to go through these changes of, okay, weight reduction, calorie restriction. You know, it's very, very traumatizing for the body. And trauma here, I mean physical trauma. So, there are exceptional cases, he says, but on average, like, it's quite difficult. And when we talk about obesity more in depth in the future, you'll hear us talking about the set point of weight. Just to give you a little context on that, if you'd like to look up on the set point of weight, please do. Now, what is interesting about this, Yashna, is what role does the schooling system play when it comes to this, you know? And he says that because of our traditions and norms as a culture, we suppress the natural instincts of children to question things by forcing them to be obedient, you know, in the name of, and you know, he says this, I'm quoting him, we suppress the natural instincts of children to question by forcing them into obedience in the name of our great culture. And that line hit me because he says that if you're going to be like, okay, listen, we know it's good for you, you do this, don't ask any questions, this is right, they're going to think that, okay, there's samosas and there's fried food and there's bags of chips and drinks and all these kinds of things in our canteen. Since the school knows everything that's good for us, this probably can't be bad for us. And here, like, here's one thing I want to note, because it's quite relevant to when we're talking about conditioning and learning, right? We will think that, okay, so if I were to go to the canteen and all I find is dosas, proper meals and fruit and everything, I'll be like, okay, this is the kind of good food I should be eating. You know? And that is within the frameworks of obedience, that, okay, we know what's good for you. You have to listen to us. So they'll automatically think that these kinds of foods are good for us, but in reality, they actually aren't. And there's one amazing thing he said, is that a child will only drink water until a parent gives him a can of soda.
Right.
So what we set as, okay, good foods that are really healthy, and the kind of relationship that parents establish with healthy food, you know, at a very young age, it really, really influences what their choices are. And there are some interesting studies I've come across with this, and I'll cover these later, but this is something that's worth thinking about. And so they'll think that it's nothing bad and it's normal. And so it's a constant thing. And now it's the rates of childhood obesity are becoming high, like increasingly high. Going back to the first point, the availability of processed food is more prevalent. It's more available. And in his chapter on diabesity, right, he says, like, on the concept of comorbidity, right, 70 million people in India have diabetes. And And again, I can't give it a comparison. I didn't make a note of a comparison. He didn't write a certain comparison in that. But there, the rates of diabetes are just high. It's increasingly mm-hmm. high. And whether you like it or not, if you are diagnosed with obesity, you do have some level of diabetes, right? If you have diabetes, you are more vulnerable to developing obesity if it's not managed. So it just happens as it is. He talks about a beautiful mechanism that we have where our body can't protect ourselves or restrict us from the amount of calories we consume. And I'm not going to get into that. Please, please do read it. It is so beautiful. I love it. It's so thought-provoking. And I love the book from a public health perspective. It addresses all kinds of things. He even talks about plausible solutions, plausible treatments to obesity. But that is beyond the scope of our podcast today. So yeah, I all in all love the book. I highly recommend it. I am going to start reading The Ethical Doctor, which is his first book. Yeah, and I'm very, very excited to read that book. And yeah, that's about it.
Thank you all for joining us today. We would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on today's episode. And since we're also new at this, we welcome feedback and constructive criticism.
Please feel free to email us at theworthofouropinion@gmail.com. And since Yashna always tells me to spell it out, it's theworthofouropinion@gmail.com. If you have any questions or ideas that you would like us to answer or cover in the next episode, or if you have book recommendations that you would love for us to check out, do send us an email about that as well. We post podcasts on the 10th, 20th, and 30th of every month, so we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.